Hi, welcome to Portland Pizza Podcast, a show about all things pizza. Broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, we feature in-depth interviews with some of the most influential pizza makers in Portland and beyond. I'm your host, Tommy Habits from Pizza Jerk. Let's talk pizza. Portland Pizza Podcast is brought to you by the good folks at Aimshire Distilling Company. Aimshire is a new distillery focused on bringing people together through great flavors in a warm environment. They love the way spirits taste, but more importantly, they love what they do. Spirits bring people together. They make memories, build bridges, and crystallize the moment. Opening up in early 2020 in Northeast Portland. Hello, welcome to another episode of the Portland Pizza Podcast. Today's guest is Mark Dockstetter. Welcome, Mark, chef and owner of Taste Bud Pizza in Portland, Oregon. Welcome.
Thanks, Tommy. Great to be here.
Taste Bud Pizza in beautiful Multnomah Village.
Yep, way up here, southwest.
In the southwest corner of Portland. It's like we were talking on the way out when I first got here that Multnomah Village is almost like this magical little
village, literally.
Like, what's the Irish musical about the town that disappears and
I don't know.
Nobody knows what I'm talking about. Oh gosh, I think of it'll come to me at some point. Anyway, welcome. It's really an honor and a pleasure to have you here. Mark and I have known each other for many years. I worked for Mark briefly and learned quite a bit about pizza making and life in general from Mark Dockstetter. So I'm really, really honored to have him here. I've been waiting a little bit, but actually the first thing I want to do is in welcoming you is present you with some gifts. I've been saying it's kind of like the last couple of shows we've done. I've waited a little bit, but I want to do it right off the bat because I'm inspired by Nardwuar, the human serviette. Do you know Nardwuar?
No.
Oh my God! I thought of any of my guests that you would be familiar with Nardwuar. Okay. Well, recommend you look him up on YouTube. Nardwuar is he's a guy from Victoria or Vancouver, British Columbia. And he does these great interviews. He does a lot of like hip hop, a lot of like punk rock interviews with people. He has this crazy, Scottish plaid, you know, like that red and black plaid hat, you know. And
the podcast.
He does a YouTube channel also, but I mean, he started. I think all his. He's always videotaped. He's always videoed his interviews, but they go way back. He like interviewed Nirvana. He's interviewed Jay-Z. He's interviewed Kendrick Lamar. I mean, he's done some pretty big interviews. And one thing I love about him is he always first thing he does. Is welcoming his guests is give them a gift, and usually pertaining to something that they love or have a connection they have. So I know that you are a big fan of like weird little regional cookbooks.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
So the first gift I have I went by Bingo Used Books on Southeast Powell Boulevard in Portland. One of my favorite little shops, and it's like an episode of Hoarders when you go in there. It's just like books piled up everywhere, but they have the craziest, weirdest little cookbook section. I love it, and highly recommend people go and check it out. My first book to you is this collection of cookbooks from the Country Kitchen Library.
Awesome.
I'm giving that to you because it's gonna—they're all gonna gardeners. Fall out on me.
Like they just did. Gardener's Way Publishing. Oh, this is sweet. Thanks, Tommy.
Drying vegetables and herbs, making cheese and butter,
ice cream
and sherbets, apple pies and crusts.
Awesome, super. I love this.
There you go. My next—I got. I've been typically getting people only like one or two books from. I've mostly been going to Powell's. I think books are a nice gift, you know,
for
just because it's like, you know, they're personal, they're You know, they kind of they last hopefully a while. This is the Terrace Times cookbook.
That's rad.
I'm not even sure where the Terrace Times are. I just like this long thin cookbook, and it says minimum effort, maximum effect, which I think is something you and I would. Oh, it's Australia. It's the Terrace Times Party Limited. It's a mini magazine which died at the end of last year, and that was 1975. So
sweet, thanks.
Dead and gone for a long time. There you go. And then also, one thing we'll get into with Mark is that he started out as a farmer. That's how I first knew him, and Taste Bud was a working farm for many years. And I got this book here called Farmers Make It Happen by Kenneth D. Rubble. It's put out by Land O'Lakes. And it's worth it just for the...
For sure.
For the pictures, and also that it's a sequel to Men to Remember.
I love the cookbooks that are like put out by a certain product, yes. Like baking soda companies or flour companies, yep, or blender companies,
and
or
that,
whatever it is.
And that's also in just really pristine condition.
Cool. Yeah, there's some epic pictures in there. Yeah.
Then, of course, 101 Things to Do with a Pickle.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Thanks, Tommy.
You're welcome. And again, those are all from Bingo Used Books, 3366 Southeast Powell Boulevard in Portland, Oregon. Go check them out. So, great little used bookstore. Mark, welcome. If you could, just tell us a little bit about yourself and your pizza.
Myself and my pizza. Well, let's see. Where to start? I mean, as Tommy mentioned, we were a farm for 5 years out in Canby, so a year-round CSA farm, and that's where we kind of got started with the kind of commercial wood-fired preparation. Mm-hmm. We built a wood-fired trailer for the Portland Farmers Market for their Summer Loaf Festival.
What year was that?
2000?
Okay.
2001, it was.
Okay. I met you in probably 2002.
Yeah. We brought the oven to a ripe supper. I think that's when we first hung out.
I do have this very vivid memory of going to the PSU Farmers Market. I had been here for a little while, and I think I had walked past your stand a few times, and the Portland Farmers Market, really one of the best in the whole world. I had been a young cook in New York City, gone a lot to the Union Square Market, which is a fantastic farmer's market, but really nothing quite like the PSU market still. And also, one thing I have to say is I was a little bit jaded because the baked goods at, and I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, but the baked goods, at least 20 years ago, at the Union Square Market were not very good. And I think I had this general idea in my head that anybody doing anything kind of a baked good at a farmer's market was not going to be very good.
Right, for sure.
And so I remember, like, I had a little chip on my shoulder, a little stuck up about going past your pizza and baked goods and stuff like breads and stuff and being like, I don't know about this. I remember it was really one of the most vivid food memories I have was going to your stand and getting a slice of apple and sausage mozzarella pizza and hot apple cider, and it blowing my mind. And it was like a crisp ball day, and it was just perfect.
It's interesting how many people that have moved here from LA or from all over the place that a lot of people have mentioned, like, their first visit to the farmer's market, and how, you know, Taste Bud and our kind of rustic presence up there really kind of change their perspective on Portland, or they really have a strong memory associated with, like, the first time they saw us. I mean, we were kind of crazy back then with a wood-fired oven trailer, and, you know, our menu was enormous with monkey bread and hazelnut sticky buns, and
that's right.
I mean, we had so much stuff.
Yeah,
lots of cobblers and
I think that might have been the first time I'd ever seen an oven on a trailer. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it was. the farmers market had been trying quite a few years to get that done, but you know, we really, with a group of Portland bakers, we just built that thing real quick, and we had to, some really awesome, they brought a bunch of international, national bakers those first couple of years, Peter Reinhardt, and, oh, I can't even remember who all was there, but yeah, it was fun. It was a big bread celebration, that Summer Loaf Festival.
Yeah.
It was epic. Yeah, so that kind of, that trailer kind of set our momentum towards wood-fired cooking. We sold our farm and kind of refocused on just really doing catering and farmers markets, you know, doing 5-6 farmers markets a week and caterings 2 or 3 nights a week. And then we opened our first restaurant over in the Brooklyn neighborhood over by the Aladdin Theater, and still ran the mobile ovens and so forth.
At Bagels.
Yeah, we did Bagels. So yeah, we built another wood-fired oven at that restaurant and did Bagels for years and years.
Montreal wood-fired Bagels.
Exactly. Yeah. And we did originally start making those at the Hillsdale Farmers Market, where we'd roll and bake them at the market. We'd have to get there like 5 hours before the market and make 1,000 bagels. Yeah, that was...
And there was a line. There'd always be a line of people waiting.
Yeah, that was funny.
You were way ahead of the bagel game in this town for sure.
Yeah, they were small and they were expensive back then, which was all right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that everyone's kind of settled up to meet the smaller size and the higher price.
Yeah.
And then it took us a long time to get this restaurant up in the village, both for the landlords to get the property ready and for us to get everything lined up. And so we've been here 4 years.
Oh, that's right. I always think of you as being here longer, but actually I remember we got reviewed at the same time, I think.
I think so.
There was some Willamette Week or Oregonian did a review of Pizza Jerk and Taste Bud on the same page. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it took us 2 years from the time they put this property on the market to actually getting open. I mean, it was a long time.
I guess I just think of you as being, having done it so much longer because of the space that was on...
And then we had a little tiny bagel cart down right next to Nong's, too. A little tiny food cart.
Oh, yeah, that's there. Right, yeah.
That was after we closed the first restaurant, just to keep some presence out.
You've been everywhere, man.
We've done a lot of reinventing ourselves. But I'm glad to be kind of stabilized here. You know, we're still rocking the big pizza truck
at
markets.
That's another addition that's happened, like, in the last 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah. It's, I think it's 5 years, too. It's actually the oven that was at our first restaurant. We just had it welded to the truck.
Oh, amazing.
So that oven's been around 10 years and showing some wear and tear, but it's a big pizza oven. So.
That's a bit... The new mobile pizza oven that Mark's talking about, which you can see and taste its bounty from at the PSU market.
We've stopped for the season.
Oh, you stopped for the season.
So we'll be back in the springtime.
We'll be back in the springtime.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty phenomenal experience. You know, it's just it's got wings.
Yeah. Full outdoors.
Yeah.
It's a big oven, so you can make a lot of pizza.
You can make a lot of pizza out of that oven. And I have made some pizza out of that oven. So really, I mean, the Taste Bud story, I mean, it was sort of like, it's what you just sort of naturally eased into, kind of. You know, I mean, you did so many things. You were a farmer, a baker.
Right.
And, I mean, let's not forget your salads. I mean, the Taste Bud salad is, you know, just one of the most magnificent
things.
Delicious, you know, like, it's one of those things that when you eat it, it's just, you feel so much better, like you've just done yourself and your body a favor by eating it. That's all I can do to describe it.
Yeah.
It's like just a very, and it's just really, I mean, I think that is one thing about you and your cooking that I really, really appreciate, is just that, for example, I mean, this morning when I showed up here, Mark was eating like a little bruschetta crostini of toast of a bread that he made with a smear of squash puree, some crumbled goat cheese, and some roasted hazelnuts, and it's just one of the most delicious things I've ever eaten in my whole life. So you have that ability of just doing something so simple and just making it really just completely mind-blowing. So
nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I think the longer I'm doing this, I kind of realize, you know, how to explain to staff and, you know, just how to be inspired. My background is photography. I went to a number of photography schools and dark rooms and just fully into that.
Tell us a little bit about like where you're from and
So I grew up in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Oh, that's right.
And
went to Rocky Mountain High.
Went to Rocky Mountain High School. Yep. And then went to Colorado Mountain College, this little tiny mountain school, and studied photography in Glenwood Springs for a year. And then took a year off and got a job at a pizza restaurant and at a bakery.
And let's go back to Rocky Mountain High for one second. John Denver
was there for the opening.
Yes, of your high school. And he sang, I would assume.
Assume so. It was before my time. Before my time.
Okay. Before your time, yes.
But, and then got a job as like the head baker at a new Great Harvest that had opened in Fort Collins.
Okay. Which is that a Colorado business?
Montana. Oh, okay. It's a franchise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think there's still a couple here. And that really opened my eyes to like fresh milling. And just commercial bread baking. Moved out here, got a job at Grand Central, and really kind of juxtaposed to Great Harvest, which is kind of great grandma homestyle bread, lots of yeast, lots of honey. And then Grand Central is like long, slow fermentation and really crusty and just a whole different thing. And so learning those two different styles really shaped, you know, my appreciation for different ways to do it. And then built my first oven with the old manager from Black Bear Bakery at a house we owned up in Northeast Portland. Black Bear was Grand Central's organic line back in the day.
Oh, wow.
We worked at a Division Street Bakery where La Provence is now over.
Oh, really? Yeah, I think that was before, a little bit before my time, maybe.
Way back
then. I moved here in 2002.
Oh,
I lived here in 94, 95, but I wasn't that aware until, but 2002 is kind of I do remember. I mean, when I was talking with Sarah Minnick, we talked a lot about kind of the pizza places because she grew up
back then
in Portland, and so had kind of like good insight into
for sure.
What is like you know what when you were? What are your earliest memories of pizza and eating pizza? Would you say?
Well, so my family has always had homemade pizza on Christmas Eve, which was my dad's tradition. I'm a quarter Sicilian, so his mom really tried to carry on some of her Italian traditions and stuff. So Christmas Eve pizza, and it's a real specific grandpa pizza.
Uh-huh.
It's so much yeast and made in a Pyrex pan. So a Pyrex dish, and so lots of oil in there, and it just kind of fries in there. I remember a couple of years ago when we went to, you know, go help prep for dinner and stuff like that, we get there a couple hours before dinner, and I'm like, where's the dough? And he's like, oh, I haven't made it yet. And I just thought he was joking, and then like an hour later, I'm like, where's the dough? And he's like, oh, I'm just about to start it. And it's like an hour and a half dough, where mine is like a three-day dough now.
Yes,
so. It was just really funny to actually see it in that perspective after all these years. I never had really noticed how much yeast is in there. But it's delicious. I mean, it's... and in Colorado, you know, we had a lot of pizzas. I mean, you know, actually one of the bigger ones that really shaped me was Blondie's Pizza in Berkeley. My dad grew up in Albany, and so I used to eat a lot of Blondie's Pizza. But in Colorado, I worked at Cazola's Pizza, which was like this hippie whole wheat crust pizza place.
Is that Fort Collins?
Yeah, Fort Collins. Whole wheat poppy seed crust. And, you know, I mean, that was back in 92, and they'd have soy cheese on it. So it kind of really meshed with my, you know, kind of hippie vibe of that time, you know, and I mean, pizza is just like a food you never get tired of, and it's, you know, I think I see myself kind of as a baker, really, and so really concentrating on the crusts over all these years, and you know, it's toppings you can put on there, put on top of a loaf, essentially. You know, when I built my first oven, just the capacity that a wood-fired oven can make, you know, not just pizza, not just bread, but beans and jerky and just how much food is in there. Because, like, you heat it up, and then you have 3 days of heat to cook out of. And so it was always, like, how can I feed the most amount of people? How can I take advantage of this, you know, what it offers?
Yeah, so in a lot of ways, the oven dictates, you know, what you're cooking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you also cook very seasonally. I mean, you are at heart a farmer.
For sure.
And who, you know, still, I mean, that's one of the things that that's one of the elements of the taste bud salad that I really adore, is that you go to the market, and I mean, in full disclosure, I worked for Mark for a little while, and I really one of my favorite memories. And one of the things that we would do at the market when preparation for the salad, so the salad would be some fresh local greens, just that you'd get from one somebody, Spring Hill or somebody, yeah, at the market, and Groundworks or many, many great farms in the market. And then buy some seasonal vegetables. So, I mean, in this, you know,
just whatever they had,
a bounty of, you know. So, I mean, squash in the fall, peppers in the summertime, yeah, you know. And you would do like a little olive oil and salt and roast those.
Yeah.
And
real high temperature.
Yeah, real high temperature. And then you would have wheat berries.
Right.
Cooked. And then two sauces, which was, one was tahini and one is a chili sauce.
And then you'd use like a parsley pesto in there. It was pretty simple pesto, yeah, but yeah.
Yeah, and you just basically mix all that stuff together. The roasted vegetables, the wheat berries, and the greens,
yep,
you know. And it's just, God, such a delicious salad, really. Yeah. And just in how it changed seasonally, just really, really loved. So, but tell us, let's go in a little bit more detail about your pizza, the pizza you serve now.
For sure.
Is it a sourdough pizza? Or?
It's not sourdough, but it is. It's like a 3 to 5 day fermentation. So there's, okay, not a ton of yeast in there, but it will bulk ferment for a day or two, okay, and then we'll form it, and it'll sit in the cooler in trays for a day or two also.
Okay.
I think, you know, 5 or 6 day dough is really ideal. Just stretches really nice and get lots of great wheat flavors in there. And so it's, you know, it's kind of thin in the center, but puffy on the edges, real crusty. You know, the high temperature of the oven really helps with that spring and get some of that nice sweet char on
it. So the high hydration in the dough?
It is pretty high. It's like 76, okay, 78%. So yeah, it's not as high as some I've played with, but it's, you know, it's kind of manageable on a commercial scale.
What kind of flour do you use?
We're using shepherd's grain.
That's what, yeah, we use.
And I've used that since the beginning.
The low protein flour.
We're using high.
Oh, you use high protein.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. We've been using that since the beginning, really. And then, you know, the toppings. I mean, my natural go-to is to change the pizzas every day, every week. But we've, you know, being in this restaurant, I've kind of learned that both the customers and the staff appreciate some reproducible consistency. So, you know, we just get, again, whatever is in bounty, and whatever, you know, if we're getting ingredients at the market, after the market, we'll just go around and buy all the arugula or buy all the tomatoes, whatever they have left that might go to waste, or, you know, just they need to move because it's at its peak. If it's peaches or whatever.
Yeah.
I just kind of mentioned my photographic background, and I kind of see that lens that I kind of use with a lot of my cooking. That with photography, I was really a documentary photography, landscape, all that sort of stuff. And I kind of see my cooking kind of similar to that. That I'm just, you know, bounty is presented, and then, you know, just some olive oil and salt in the oven, some fire. That's kind of the lens of it all. And, you know, that just is the input. So it's just kind of like taking a picture of it, presenting it of sorts is how I kind of explain how I am inspired. So it's just whatever the farmers bring or whatever is in season, you know.
Right on. I can dig it.
Yeah.
That's it. I find it really interesting. I mean, it was what you were saying about your customers wanting you to kind of have stuff that you, like a consistency is sort of what you're saying, which is what I've heard from my customers and what I found. And I think, you know, Pizza Jerk is very, you know, we used to do some kind of, and we do specials, you know, seasonal specials, but you know, we have a real consistent, pretty consistent menu of kind of classic pizzas. Yeah. And talking to Sarah Minnick, though, on the other hand, I mean, Sarah from Lovely's 50/50.
Sure.
She, I mean, she really is seasonal, and her stuff changes constantly. And her customers are cool with that, you know. So it's really, it's interesting to see. I think you're kind of a little bit in the middle of like, yeah, you know, where your customers trust you to cook seasonally. I do think of you having somewhat similar styles in that it's a, you know, a wood fired, very seasonal, very market driven. approach to pizza.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think she really features some, I think, more unusual and kind of really hard to finding farmer ingredients for sure, and some great combinations and great cheeses. So, I mean, the farmers market, our menu changes. You know, we write that menu every morning just with what the farmers give us. Yeah, for a busy restaurant, I mean, it's harder to do that, I found. I mean, it is my natural state, but it is, it's kind of unpredictable.
Right on. What do you love about running a pizzeria?
What do I love around pizzeria? Well, I mean, I really do just love a ton of the customer interactions and, you know, just the people coming together and the community that brings us all here. You know, for a long time, it was really kind of a community oven, I felt like. And so, you know, there's lots of history with that from when ovens were used and the bakers would bake their bread and people would bring their pies. I mean, I think, you know, we've kind of, that was more so when it was just at the farmer's market, when we kind of had a market pizzeria. I mean, I just love, you know, the relationships with the farmers, you know, kind of following with the seasons, you know. I don't know. It is a hard question. I've been doing this 19 years, so I kind of, you know, I think similar to when I was farming, like every season you're like, am I going to do this cycle again? You know, winter's here, you're recuperating.
Yeah.
You know, like, it is a lot of work. Like, yeah, it is a lot of work. And I think I actually took a year off from Taste Bud and got a job at a distillery in town because I just kind of reached a little bit of a breaking point of just like having to recoup and recenter, and I was just wearing way too many hats and not really able to do all those jobs as good as I should have. And so, you know, kind of created a little bit of vacuum, and, you know, we filled in the spots, and I was able to come back and really kind of reconnect with the aspects that I like, you know, menu development and just being creative, and, you know, just step away from a lot of the stuff I'm not good at.
Which would lead to my next question about what are the biggest challenges about running a pizzeria, and I think you've already
I think being an artist, I think, is tricky to run the business aspect of it. You know, I used to make fun of all those kids in high school who were getting business degrees, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, that's so boring. And it's like, now I need those guys. Like, I need them.
Yeah. Do you have older siblings?
I have two older brothers.
My older, that's right, I know one of your brothers.
Neil.
Yes. Haven't seen him in a while, but how's he doing?
He's doing good.
Good. I was funny. I mean, when I went to college for English writing and literature, and I had two brothers that both said to me, take business classes.
Right.
And I was just like, you know, I'm not going to take any business. What do I need business classes for?
Right.
You know, they were right.
Yep, it is true. So
I've been taking a 10-year business class at this point.
Right. Exactly. Learning on the road.
Take one semester business class. Or take 10 years.
No,
20 years. All right. besides your own, where do you find yourself eating pizza the most?
Well, I do really have a super soft spot for Lovely's, for sure. I mean, I worked over there for a hot minute when I was taking my break.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Helped out with Alex, and that was fun. And, I mean, boy, who do I get to? I mean, there's just so many people I admire. I mean, I love your pizza and Scotty's pizza. I don't get out as much to eat pizza as I would love to.
Yeah.
I mean, I do have the next snow day I have in my neighborhood. I live up in Northwest Portland. I want to go to every single slice pie place, just like a slice tour. There's like 14 places.
Are there really?
Yeah. Within like a square mile. There's so many.
There's straight from New York.
Escape.
Well, there's Escape from New York and Straight from New York.
Is that on Burnside?
Straight from New York's on Burnside, yes.
Yeah, so there's that place, yeah. And then there's Eat Pizza, and then there's Pizzicato, and then there's... I have a whole list. I can pull it up. It is quite a...
I always think of Northwest as not having that many pizza spots, but I guess they really do now.
They do.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's
there's
maybe
a Life of Pie. There's a Life of Pie pizza on 23rd. There's and Ranch is going into.
I saw that
on 21st, just down the street.
I mean, there's certain aspects. I mean, I like how everyone's pizza is kind of unique for sure. Like, and so, you know, the square cast iron pizzas and Sicilian or grandma styles. I love those.
There's a new place that just opened up in the Brooklyn neighborhood.
I heard about it.
Yeah, like just Pizza Donaise or
Donaise. Yeah, I haven't. Are they just open?
They just opened. I saw Scotty posting about it. Looks really good. They're doing a clam. They're doing a square clam pie too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's curious a good
about
that.
Anybody else doing a clam pie? I'm curious about it for sure. Being from Connecticut,
right?
It's kind of a classic Connecticut thing. Right on. I do. Yeah. I mean, I think you certainly do reach a sort of a doing pizza. You're probably eating pizza often because you're tasting your own, you know, what you're doing. It's just like I find myself getting a little burnt out sometimes, but also having, you know, the ability to almost be able to eat pizza no matter who's making it or where I'm getting it from. But that is one thing in Portland that we're, and part of the reason why we're doing this podcast is that there are so many really great pizzerias and so many different styles of pizza that it's, you know, why not? Let's talk about it.
For sure.
Yeah. So I mean, so that's great. What would you consider to be good pizza?
I would definitely say one of my biggest pet peeves is when the mozzarella is not melted all the way. I mean, that's what makes bad pizza.
Yeah.
I think. Which it's surprising, you know, if you get it's surprising some places that get away with that. You know, and it's just, you know, it's got to be well cooked.
Okay.
It's tricky, I think.
Which is interesting because, it seems like for almost any, pizza is one of those things where that for almost anything that you either like or dislike, there's an equal and opposite. It's like the Newton law of physics. There's an equal...
People who appreciate it?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of pizza where it's like... I saw the guy from Best Pizza do it. He had where they finish a pizza with uncooked mozzarella, shredded mozzarella.
Weird.
Yeah, right? Seems like.
I mean, I could see if it was on purpose, maybe, but when it's just not hot.
Yes.
That's, I guess, is where I'm coming from.
I think it is. I think probably if I was to describe what is not good pizza, I think it just would be anything that was done without thought or care.
Yeah.
You know, maybe. Because there's, I mean, but then again, like.
They
have pizza making robots. I mean, we're pizza making robots sometimes.
I mean, I did hear some article about how they have artificial intelligence that they can put a pizza, give it a picture of a pizza, and it tries to analyze how to build that what order to put it in just by analyzing the image.
Crazy.
We're all duped.
Well, if you could eat any pizza anywhere at any time, what would that be? Where would you go?
Anytime.
Back in history. Go forward in
pizza.
The future. Would you go forward and eat a robotic pizza?
A robotic pizza. A 3D printed pizza.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'll depart a little from just flatbreads and like maybe some stuff in Turkey and stuff like that where they do those kind of like slipper shaped loaves with polenta and eggs in them and stuff like that. Like, I don't know, I think some of the more unique ones maybe. I mean, I think that culture of pizza and flatbread, you know, I think I ride that line a little, especially for some people that think pizza's pretty specific preparation and toppings and stuff. So I think, you know, some of the Middle Eastern and, you know, Uzbekistan or something, some flatbreads that they make would be pretty fun to just really dive into.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, I think probably the Middle East has had more of an influence on pizza than we really give it credit for, I think. I think everybody talks about Italy, but Italy and Greece were really taken from the Middle East for sure a lot. Yeah. It was all just a big melting pot there.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of the Connecticut pizzas, I have not had... Sal's, right?
She's Sally's. Yeah, yeah.
Is Sal's a different one from Subway Sal's?
I mean, Sal's was the pizzeria in Do the Right Thing.
I'm not sure that was it.
Spike Lee. If you could have any pizza anywhere, you would have Sal's Pizza from Do the Right Thing. It actually did look like really good pizza.
But, you know, the coal-fired pizza and stuff like that, I'd like to... I've never had that.
I know. I that's something I would actually like to know a little bit more about. Like, what... That is a big thing still. As coal-fired ovens and... I remember when I lived in Hoboken for a little while and, like... around 95, you know, and there were still these little Italian bakeries throughout, like, kind of, I remember a couple that were coal-fired Italian bakeries, and they had, like, just the best bread, just such delicious, you know, I don't know what it was about it, you know, but, yeah, I've always been drawn to kind of, like, the coal-fired, I think even Lombardi is still, I think. They're getting coal from somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's powering their oven?
Exactly. I mean, I kind of, you know, I just love the regionalness too of pizzas. You know, just Detroit pizza and, like, what is it? Scranton has Old Forged pizza and stuff like that. Like, there's just so many different unique styles that even just kind of checking those off the list.
I would love to do a pizza tour sometime of this country. You know. Like, I know people have done, like, barbecue tours and stuff like that. Pizza and sandwiches, obviously, yeah. I mean, I think I would love to do some time. Yeah, it's interesting, too. I mean, I find when, because we do at Pizza Jerk, we do a hearth-baked, you know, 18-inch thin crust, you know, what I consider to be Connecticut style. And then we also do cast iron pizza, pan pizza, which, and like you were saying about, like, your grandfather would make in a Pyrex pan. I mean, it's all, like, there's... Those are connected. I mean, it's like the pan pizza is a pretty universal thing. You know, it's like, I think, and I think that's how really people, when they try to classify pizzas, I feel like, you know, they get classified as, like, you know, regional, you know, but really I feel like there should be like by how they're done. I mean, more like there should be a coal oven, gas, electric, wood fire, those should be the categories, and then pan pizza should be another category. Because it's,
I mean, pan pizza is home pizza.
As home pizza, for sure.
People don't have Harris or Stones, especially.
Exactly, Mario, yeah.
So.
And having the olive oil in there and the dough crisping up is sort of like, you know, that's... when I was doing the cast iron pizzas, the Pizza Jerk, that... In my mind, I was thinking about the Greek pizza that I grew up eating, which was all pan pizza in a lot of great places in Connecticut, and I guess it's all throughout New England, this kind of a style. But, you know, that's what I was thinking about. But I had so many people be like, "Oh, this is very similar to the pizza I grew up in Missouri eating in Missouri," or, you know, people wanted to call it Detroit pizza at first. And I was like, "I'm not calling it Detroit pizza. I've never, you know, like I've never been to Detroit. I'm not going to claim. You know, I have too much. You know, it's like I have too much respect for all these places to try and attach it to something I don't really know
for
about."
Sure.
You know, so
it's funny with bagels. When we started making wood-fired bagels, I had no idea that there was, you know, such distinction.
And
it was a really interesting learning curve for me about, you know, the New Yorkers that would come up to me and, you know, tell me what we need to do and, like, just try to redirect us.
The New Yorkers will always tell you what you need to do, right?
Exactly. But then someone's like, they make wood-fired bagels in Montreal. And I was like, great, I'm not a New York-style bagel.
Yes. Montreal.
Exactly. That I embraced when I found out there was a different style.
Nice. You're a big music fan, I know for sure. I don't know, you know, have you ever played music?
No.
You had a radio show. What music do you like to listen to when you're making pizza?
Man. Well, that's a tricky question. I mean, I collect records, but I still have my collection from my youth, but I really listen to a ton of radio, you know, X-ray radio, Freeform radio, even OPB2, OP Music.
KBOO?
KBOO, for sure, yeah. And, you know, I love learning about new styles. I mean, I remember when I used to collect records, it was a full-time job of, like, keeping up on it, just building the collection. So I don't know. I listen just a whole gambit of stuff now.
All
you know,
over the place,
some heavy. You know, Friday afternoons they play a show on Freeform called "Whoa, This Is Heavy," which is great. So
nice.
It's a good Friday afternoon. But you know, Saturday morning there's reggae on one of those channels. And like, so I'm a pretty good moving target.
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, I think like there's prep music and like when you're like the person alone. Making the dough or something like that. I mean, I'm definitely more like on like the Grateful Dead, Steve Gunn, sort of like guitar-y, so, you know, maybe Burt Jansch or something like that. And then during service, I'm like Sabbath or something a little bit heavier or, you know, whatever the...
I mean, I think my natural state is some garage music and lo-fi stuff.
I know we first connected over like Unwound and things like
that.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I love a lot of the Kill Rock Star.
Yeah.
I
awesome.
Just got tickets to Bikini Kill.
Oh, nice.
Did I tell you that story?
No.
It was my first time trying to get tickets online, like a queue system, back when I got tickets.
Uh-huh.
Like, in a rush, it was like you had to call Ticketmaster or wait in line at like Dick's Sporting Goods or something for tickets.
Yeah.
But it was quite an experience. Quite an experience. I ended up getting some tickets that were a little farther than I wanted, but
nice. Where are they playing?
So they released their whole tour at like the same time, and so I had three different places. I knew they were playing at the Crystal Ballroom, which I couldn't get tickets for. Those went super fast.
Okay.
And I did kind of accidentally get tickets at the Olympia or the Oregon or some Olympia Film Society or something. So that's the kickoff show in Olympia.
Oh, that'd be cool.
So I get it's their first one, and that's where they're from. So I'm pretty excited about that. But that website crashed, and like a half hour later, after it had said it was sold out, my shopping cart queued up with two tickets. So that's what I'm really excited about.
Oh, nice.
But I also bought one ticket for Victoria, Canada.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know. That was like my last ditch effort to try and see them. So now I have a road trip.
Very cool, very cool. What's your favorite pizza movie? Do you have a pizza?
Pizza movie. Oh, that's funny. Pizza movie.
Or
this
one usually throws people.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if you can actually think of a movie that has pizza in it.
Boy, there was. What is that? I mean, I remember when I was younger, that one with Julia Roberts. What's that one?
Oh, Mystic Pizza.
Mystic Pizza.
Yeah.
I mean, I forget how old I was when that came out. But
I recently saw that for the first time. I never saw that. It was like, I think it was like mid-80s when that came out. It was Julia Roberts and, what is that actress's name?
The short woman.
I forget who else was in it. But it was, it takes place in Connecticut. Mystic Connecticut it's supposed to be. It's like Mystic Connecticut, but it's really, it was like filmed more around... kind of like Madison, I feel like, or something. It's like a very pretty coastal Connecticut. There's like this rich kid who goes to Yale and stuff like that or something.
I'd like to see a couple. You should put together a list of pizza movies.
I will. That's a good idea. And we'll post it on the podcast website or like our, we'll have a link in the...
You could have a marathon at Pizza Jerk or something like that.
That would be awesome. I would love to do that. To me, it's funny. I think one of my most... when I think of pizza and movies, I think about Rock and Roll High School, and there's a scene where the Ramones, somebody brings them a whole bunch of pizzas. I don't know if they're about to play or something like that, and I remember they're all like, "Oh, pizza, love pizza, yeah."
That's funny.
They're at Rock and Roll High School, which featured our friend David Barber.
Yeah, I know. His headdress. That's good.
Amazing. Amazing. That's one of my favorite things. Well, right on. Well, you know, Mark, it's been a real pleasure to have you here. I mean, got anything else to leave our...
I don't know.
This is your first podcast.
Thank
you very much for... I really appreciate you taking the time and spending it with us. Well, Mark is leaving for 2 weeks for... Jolly old England tomorrow to see his daughter, and so we thank you especially for taking the time. And
for sure. My
pleasure. Have a safe trip.
Thanks.
See you when you get back.
See you, Tommy.
All
right.
That wraps up that episode of Portland Pizza Podcast. Thanks for listening in. Check out show notes for more info on our guests and where to get some great pizza. Now let's go get a slice. Hello, welcome to another episode of Portland Pizza Podcast. Today's guest is Mark Dockstatter. Welcome, Mark, chef and owner of Taste Bud in Portland, Oregon.
Thanks, Tommy.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Nice to be here.
Good. So what a pleasure and what an honor it is to have you here.
Thanks.
Oh, shoot. You know what? I'm sorry. We got to stop.